Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Newsmakers from America and around the world speak with journalists in an unscripted and unrehearsed discussion about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. Here is your host on this edition of Press Conference USA, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. This month marks the 13th anniversary of the 2001 terrorist attacks on U.S. soil. And as the United States continues to battle al-Qaeda-affiliated groups around the world, whether in North Africa, Somalia, and Yemen, we are confronting an even more lethal and brutal terrorist group, ISIL, also known as the Islamic State, which now controls large swaths of territory in Iraq and Syria. On this edition of the program, we'll discuss the state of al-Qaeda, as well as concentrate on the threat posed by ISIL and analyze the strategy put forward by the Obama administration to combat it. Our guest on this edition of the program is William McCants. He's a fellow in the Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution and director of its Project on U.S. Relations with the Islamic World. William McCants also teaches at Johns Hopkins University here in Washington and has held various government and think tank positions relating to terrorism. From 2009 to 2011, he served as a U.S. State Department senior advisor for countering violent extremism. William is also founder of Jihadika.com, an academic blog focused on the global jihadi movement. We'll ask William to discuss the state of al-Qaeda and its affiliates, as well as elicit his views about the U.S. strategy to degrade and defeat ISIL, which consists of carrying out airstrikes against Islamic State targets inside Iraq and possibly Syria, building an international coalition that would include airstrikes, ground forces, and cutting off funding for the militants. William McCants, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, William, first I'd like to get your assessment of ISIL, also known as ISIS, also known as the Islamic State. It seems that even though it's an al-Qaeda offshoot, it has become far more lethal and brutal. Talk about how it differs from al-Qaeda.
Sure. So originally, the Islamic State was part of al-Qaeda. And for a number of years, it was really a front group for al-Qaeda in Iraq. Al-Qaeda in Iraq was formed a few years after the U.S. invasion of the country. And in 2006, after the death of its leader, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the organization decided to rebrand itself as the Islamic State in Iraq. But still, it was taking orders from al-Qaeda for all of those years. The relationship between the two of them was often contentious. It was hard to get messages back and forth. And plus, the Islamic State commanders on the ground inside Iraq had their own ideas of how they wanted to prosecute the war. By 2008, 2009, the organization was really on its deathbed. It had alienated all of its allies by carrying out attacks on them. It had alienated the Sunni population that it claimed to be protecting. And many analysts believe that the organization was quickly becoming irrelevant. The reward for its minister of war had gone from several millions of dollars to just tens of thousands of dollars. It was the Arab Spring that really gave the Islamic State a shot in the arm. And the deteriorating security situation in Syria really super empowered the organization. And in the security vacuum that opened up as a consequence of the civil war enabled them to take a lot of territory, both in eastern Syria and western Iraq, which is why it's so strong today.
And indeed, there's another reason. It's because they seem to be self-financing, something that al-Qaeda hasn't yet achieved. Talk about how they finance themselves.
Sure. So one of the consequences of being so cut off from al-Qaeda back in the 2000s is that the organization had to develop ways to finance itself. It couldn't rely on funding from al-Qaeda Central. So they engaged in kidnapping, extortion, as a way to raise money. And even then, they were raising, some estimates say, between $70 million and $200 million a year. With all of the opportunities that have opened up because of the civil war in Syria, now they've been able to add many more opportunities to extort, many more kidnappings, but also oil. and trans-border shipping they've added to their portfolio. And now analysts estimate that they have something like a $2 billion war chest. They are able to finance themselves almost completely and don't rely on any money from countries in the region or really any private donations. They're sort of unique in that regard.
And that, of course, makes them all the more formidable. Before we get into President Obama's strategy, how would you assess the threat? Are you really concerned about not only their impact in the region, in the Levant, but also their ability to attack the U.S. homeland and Europe through the foreign fighters in particular?
My understanding of the threat, everything I've read, suggests that they're not a real threat to the American homeland. The foreign fighters they have are primarily from the Arab world. The next tier is from Europe. They represent more of a threat, the foreign fighters do, to those two regions than they do to the United States. We're lucky to have a very good security apparatus in place. We're also lucky to be separated from Europe by an ocean. It makes it really hard to get into this country and carry out attacks. And there's only about 100 Americans or so fighting over there. Many of them won't come home. This is primarily a regional threat. This is a threat to our allies, which is why President Obama decided to act, not when the beheadings happened. That's a popular misunderstanding. He didn't act when the beheadings happened. He acted when the Islamic State advanced on Mosul and then on Baghdad. This was seen as an attempt to overthrow an ally in Baghdad and possibly push into Jordan and Saudi Arabia.
The beheading simply alarmed the American public and made them perhaps more willing to back such a strategy, perhaps.
That's right. But I thought it was also surprising to me and laudable that the president did not take the opportunity of those beheadings to rally American support for what he was doing. He was very careful to say in his speech that the organization did not represent a direct threat to the United States.
Well, let's get into the strategy and your assessment of its effectiveness. As we said, it's a combination of airstrikes against Islamic State targets, but it also includes getting the Iraqi government to be more inclusive. We know there's a new prime minister, but there are some problems in terms of getting the cabinet officials nominated that will please the Sunni communities as well as the Shia communities. That's a very important component, as I understand, as well as, of course, cutting off funding for the militants, getting an international coalition. What is your assessment of this strategy, and which component is, in your view, the most paramount?
The toughest component is persuading the Iraqi government to get their act together, making sure the Sunni tribes in Western Iraq feel more included. And two is to get their security apparatus functioning again. We spent a lot of money on training their military and it completely fell apart. And we're focusing our training equipped efforts at the moment on the Kurds. And we're sort of tacitly working with the Shia militias, but it's going to be important to also train and equip Sunni militias that are operating in Anbar province if we're going to have any hope of sapping the strength of the Islamic State. The airstrikes make sense, but all of this, as complicated as it is in Iraq, it's going to be 10 times harder in Syria because we don't have a permissive government there and there's not a reliable ally on the ground to work with.
Well, Syria we will come to in just a moment, but one more question on Iraq. Do you think the Iraqi government can move fast enough to both appease or placate the disgruntled Sunni communities, tribal members, and others so that they will turn away from this alliance with the Islamic State and then collaborate on behalf of the Shia-dominated government?
Well, the track record of the Iraqi government suggests no, that they will not be able to move fast enough. I saw recently that the key positions of Interior Minister and Defense Minister have not been filled, and that's indicative of the continuing political problems that are plaguing the Iraqi government, and they're going to slow down any effort to include the Sunnis. But I don't think that has to stop the U.S. effort to, one, carry out airstrikes against the Islamic State, but two, work with more capable militias like the Kurds, and also focus on training Sunni tribesmen that are willing to work with the United States and against the Islamic State.
What about the publicity regarding our strategy? You know, there's all this publicity regarding the West and in particular the U.S. approach to fight ISIL. Does it redound to their benefit to some extent? Are they wallowing in all the publicity and then figuring out how they can elude the airstrikes?
surely they're going to get a bump in their recruitment because of the publicity they've gotten. But look, this Islamic State has been there for quite some time. They've already managed to capture the imagination of jihadis all over the world before the United States decided to carry out strikes against them. The fact that they have established the caliphate is just catnip to the jihadi movement. They love that stuff. So they're very good at recruiting, even if the United States is not there to help them along.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our guest is William McCants. He's a fellow in the Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution and director of its project on U.S. relations with the Islamic world. I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that Press Conference USA is also available online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. Also, we love to hear from you. Please send your feedback on guests and topics to PCUSA@voanews.com. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or keep up with me on Facebook at facebook.com/Carol Castiel VOA. And here's a shout out to our faithful listener, Alfred Likoze Kiwanuka from Uganda. Thanks for your comment. Well, back to you, William McCants, to talk about now the international coalition. Discuss, in your view, how that's going, the recruitment of whether it's European allies, France, and also, more importantly, perhaps the Arab allies, the strange bedfellows, all of whom, though, we have to believe are not supportive of ISIL and want to see it degraded and destroyed, but not at the expense of, obviously, the Sunni populations. It's a very delicate balancing act.
It is a delicate balancing act. I agree with you that all of them want to see the Islamic State destroyed. These are allies, particularly the Arab allies, that haven't gotten along very well with one another for the past 2 or 3 years. And it's had to do with differences over policy in Syria, primarily, and who to fund in the opposition. It's also the case that a lot of these countries have to be quite measured in the support they give the United States because they don't want to turn this into a broader war of Sunnis ganging up on Shia. So they have to avoid that perception as well. So Saudi Arabia, for example, it doesn't look like their air force is going to get involved. It looks more that they're going to focus on the training and equip mission by sending Free Syrian Army members there to train. And I imagine a lot of the other countries will be providing similar sort of assistance. I think the United States is going to bear the brunt of the direct military action. Even though there have been ideas floated to the contrary, I just don't see it happening.
What about Turkey? It's been characterized as a reluctant ally. Of course, we know that the Islamic State is holding some 49 hostages from their consulate in Mosul. But will they at least help stanch the flow of jihadi fighters across their border? How do you think they will collaborate in this effort?
I hope they staunch the flow of jihadists across their border. They've been a big problem. They have really helped empower the jihadi element that's fighting in Syria. They turned a blind eye to a lot of these guys who were coming across. There were thousands of them. They knew exactly who they were. They were hanging out in border towns before they went. Turkey now is in the difficult position of having the Islamic State right on their border, so they have to be a little bit more measured in how they deal with them. And as you said, they've also got these hostages that they have to worry about. So I don't see them doing much for the United States. They're going to be a very passive partner.
Let's turn now to Syria. Right now, we are looking at funding a number of moderate rebels. This was a proposal made several years ago by former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, former Defense Secretary Leon Panetta, and former CIA Chief David Petraeus. Back then, they did suggest and actually recommend that the Obama administration help arm the moderate opposition. This was rejected by President Obama. Many are saying now the rise of ISIL is in part because we did not do that. This is a historical if. That said, now President Obama has come around to agree to funding and training the rebels because there is no alternative, as you said, in Syria. It's either the Islamic State or Assad, who is also anathema because he has attacked his own civilians. He has actually even, you could even say, emboldened ISIS because instead of attacking them in the past years, he has attacked the moderate rebels and civilians in order to make this false choice, it's either me or the extremists.
That's right.
So at any rate, with that, what is your assessment of whether or not the United States should eventually launch airstrikes against ISIS targets in Syria? What are the challenges, risks in doing that? And do you think that this proposal to finally fund the training and equipping of moderate rebels, perhaps in Saudi Arabia, will in fact be effective, or is it too late? Will the gap between their ability to hit the ground and help fight ISIL not be fast enough?
Right. So the president has pledged himself to destroying the Islamic State, and yet he has also said that we will have no troop presence on the ground. It is going to be very difficult to destroy the Islamic State without any direct U.S. involvement on the ground. The two places he highlighted as models for his strategy were Yemen and Somalia, where we have carried out airstrikes, where we have relied on a local proxy or friendly government to prosecute the war for us, sometimes our own special forces. Those are containment strategies. Those are not destruction strategies. Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula and Yemen is still there. The Shabaab in Somalia is still there. They have just shrunk. And I think that's a fine strategy to pursue when you don't have many good options. But he has set out destruction as the goal. And I think that the American public is going to quickly become disappointed when he is not able to deliver on that goal. I think he should have set out a more modest goal of just degrading the organization. But regardless of what goal you choose, you have to go into Syria. It's not enough just to do it in Iraq, because they will just come back. And doing it inside Syria requires a capable proxy force on the ground. And as you said, there is not a capable one there right now. I'm one of the people who believed that we should have been arming the Free Syrian Army. My analysis was that because the United States was sitting it out and not providing a steady flow of ammunition, weapons, money, that it left room for other independent actors to fund more extreme groups. And also it left our allies in the region to pick and choose people that they wanted to fund. Unless the United States was there kind of corralling everybody and putting skin in the game, it wasn't going to bring everybody together. Now we're going to attempt to do that. But for one, it still faces those obstacles of outside money, reluctant allies. It's going to have to solve that, cut off the outside money, corral our allies. But two, the money that's being pledged is not a lot if you look at what they are asking this organization to now do. I read something that they plan on training 5,000 troops in the first year. The Islamic State alone has 30,000 troops, and then these guys also have to face the Assad regime, which is armed to the teeth. It's amazing to me that all the administration is asking for is $500 million and a very modest outcome. If they are serious about doing this, they would ask for much more money and really increase the timeline and the number of people trained, which makes me worry that the administration, again, is not serious about doing this, that they are trying to run down the clock.
Yes. I have to step out of my moderator role and agree with you wholeheartedly with your analysis. And here's another question. How can the United States strike ISIL targets in Syria without unwittingly helping the nefarious Assad regime?
I think we can go after the Islamic State without going after the Assad regime. But clearly the Assad regime in the short term is going to benefit from the Islamic State leaving, because we are not going to have a capable force on the ground that's going to move into those areas and be able to control them. So he's the primary beneficiary in the short term. In the long term, if we create a more robust effort to train and equip and arm partners on the ground inside Syria, then he may not benefit as much, but certainly in the short term he will.
Oh, just contingencies, like what if our jets are targeted by Assad? Would we be susceptible to getting into hostilities with the Assad regime, and knowing full well that Russia will try to thwart the U.S. attack or even defending themselves in Syria? Iran, of course, is backing Assad. All of these various risks.
That's right. We are lucky in a way that the Islamic State, much of its territory that it holds is in the east, where Assad is less interested. Assad is more interested in the western coast. That's his primary base of support. So we don't necessarily have to get into a conflict with them. Where we would get into a conflict is if we move closer to Aleppo, where the Islamic State also is, but where Assad's forces are as well. And it's an area they really want to hold on to. And I think the Assad regime will see that as an escalation, an attempt to turn the war against them.
And then with respect to Iran, there's a lot of talk about the fact that the United States and Iran do see a common enemy in ISIL, but it is quite clear that we don't share the same end game, particularly in Syria. How much should the United States cooperate with Iran with respect to defeating ISIL in the greater Middle East?
I think the United States is going to have to tacitly cooperate with Iran in Iraq for sure, because the Iranian proxies, the Shia militia inside Iraq, are one of the few capable forces on the ground that can push back against the Islamic State. Inside Syria, it's much more fraught, but any final political solution in Syria is going to have to involve the Iranians. And the Iranians are not going to make the calculation that Assad must go until his regime is really put at risk. And if the Obama administration wanted to change the Iranian calculation, they would also have to think about, again, seriously bolstering the Free Syrian Army and directing it not just to go after the Islamic State, but also the Assad regime.
As we conclude, William McCants, briefly discuss the state of the threat from the actual al-Qaeda affiliates around the world, such as AQIM in North Africa, al-Shabaab in Somalia, Boko Haram, and then, of course, AQAP in Yemen and others.
Right, all those guys.
You know, as we're talking about ISIL, we still have them to contend with.
Right, and this is a part of the problem for al-Qaeda itself, is to maintain relevancy when many people in its rank and file are much more enchanted with the Islamic State. Even Boko Haram has made noises about perhaps joining the Islamic State. There are factions inside al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula who've talked about joining the Islamic State. So al-Qaeda Central under Zawahiri, its head, is going to have to try and remain relevant, which makes it a little bit scary for the counterterrorism community, because when terrorist groups want to remain relevant, they need to carry out spectacular attacks. And the worry is that al-Qaeda will be even more driven to go after the United States, particularly in this country, because they want to reassert themselves as the heads of the global jihadi community, because right now the Islamic State has surpassed them. In terms of the other affiliates and the threats that they present to the United States and its allies, it's mainly al-Qaeda and the Arabian Peninsula that's the worry, because they have the technological capability to create bombs that can reach out and touch us. The others are more locally focused insurgencies that threaten our local partners, but not us.
And finally, William McCants, you worked with the State Department's Department for Countering Violent Extremism. You said that you actually helped to create that group. And most analysts say that we can kill as many terrorists with drones and airstrikes as we want, but unless we address the root problems, whether it's empowering Sunnis in Iraq or in Syria, giving these groups a stake in the economy and the political structure, then we will only temporarily contain but not really defeat these extremist groups from proliferating. So what are your final thoughts with regard to combating the ideology, whether through social media or these other strategies?
Right. So combating the ideology is a tricky thing to do, because you're trying to change people's minds, which is hard in any profession. I think what we landed on at the State Department is a very simple, basic strategy of just bad-mouthing al-Qaeda, just making sure that true but negative information about the organization was getting out into the world, because a lot of it gets lost in smaller media venues or online and social media discussion boards that are private. The agency I helped set up at the State Department, the Center for Strategic Counterterrorism Communications, is dedicated to making sure that information gets out there to the world. And it, believe me, it's much more of an art than it is a science.
And one more question with respect to our allies in the Middle East, in this coalition against the Islamic State. Do you see their cooperation regarding stemming the flow of foreign fighters and particularly financing, even though Islamic State seems to be self-financing, but there are things that can be done, blocking oil sales. How do you see that part of the strategy?
Right. So I think our allies, and particularly Turkey, are finally getting serious about making sure that the Islamic State is not going to be able to sell this oil that it has across Turkey's borders or elsewhere. And more broadly, for all the other jihadi groups that are fighting inside Syria, our allies are finally, I think, getting more serious about cutting off private money that's coming from their countries to finance those groups. But it's also a very difficult thing to do because a lot of that money is raised as charity, and then it is passed without the donors knowing to these groups.
And I have another question, actually.
Hit me.
With regard to boots on the ground, there's also all this talk about some members of Congress think that it will take perhaps more American troops, not just the advisory elements that are there now and will continue to go. And others are saying, well, boots on the ground, but it has to be local, regional troops, whether in Iraq or in Syria with the proxy Free Syria Army. What about Saudi Arabia, Jordan, UAE? Do any of these countries have the ability to contribute troops?
You said the right word is ability. And I suspect, at least for a country like Saudi Arabia that spent all this money on defense, I don't think their military is that good. And I think they would be concerned about putting that on public display, particularly since they have this Cold War going with Iran. So I believe that is also a concern. Jordan has a better military, but it also has to live with the guy who ends up ruling Syria. And Jordan has to be very careful if that guy ends up being Assad again. They don't want to have invaded the country.
All right. William McCance is a fellow in the Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution, and he's director of its project on U.S. relations with the Islamic world. William, thank you so much for a terrific conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. Our engineer was Marty Curcius. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. From Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, the Voice of America has brought you Press Conference USA. You can email your questions or comments about this edition of Press Conference USA to pcusa@voanews.com. And to keep up with all the latest news, tune to the Voice of America on radio, television, or the World Wide Web. Join us again next week when another newsmaker speaks with journalists about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. We'll see you next week for another edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.